Live from the campus of Brooklyn College, it is Geek Speak with Ian Levenstein. Ladies and gentlemen, Ian Levenstein.
Hey there, everybody. My name is Ian Levenstein, and welcome to Geek Speak here at SpeakGeekSpeak.com. This is a special edition of Geek Speak, and what I'm going to be playing for you today is an interview that I conducted with the guys who did This Is Otakudom and Steam, two of my favorite anime fan parodies. This interview was conducted right after Day 3 of New York Comic Con came to a close. We were lucky enough to get a nice, quiet room and conducted one hell of an interview, and these guys are a riot. Seriously, I had such a wonderful time talking to them, and it was great getting to know them during the con. And that's basically really all I have to say before the interview starts, so I'm going to get the ball rolling here. So here they are, the members of This Is Otakudom. Enjoy it as much as I enjoyed it. If not, I know where you live.
Okay.
All right, folks. Well, the New York Comic Con is officially history, technically, I guess.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! And I am blessed to be having an interview with three of the stars of Steam, the sequel to This Is Otakudom.
Not a sequel.
Well, more like a second movie, not a sequel. But the world will
like
be
more
saved.
Crap.
The world will be saved by Steam. That's all I have to say. And I, of course, am joined by Scott Melzer, the guy who put it all together in the first place. I've got Matthew Pison, who was also very integral to the making of both of them, and John Miller, who is a voice actor and had plenty to do with the making of it as well. Now, first question I'm going to ask before we actually get into Steam, how did you guys get into anime in the first place? And I'll start it off with Scott.
I was born watching Speed Racer and all the other things, and I've just always watched it my whole life. But I didn't get really back into it, I think, till Robotech hit, right when I was entering college in 1984, my college's science fiction club, and ever since then, I've been into it.
How about you, John?
I was always into Voltron and Thundercats, but what really nailed me was definitely Ronin Warriors when I was about, I think, 11 or maybe 12 years old, and that's what just set me in, started buying.
Not Pokemon?
No Pokemon.
Well, I think you're a bit older than that, so yeah. And, of course, Matt?
Well, let's see. When I was growing up, I was always a big fan of Warner Brothers cartoons, Disney cartoons, very American-style animation. And it wasn't until years later that I found out that a lot of the things I've been watching, like Gatchaman or Battle of the Planets, that sort of thing,
G-Force,
or Speed Racer, were actually Japanese imports. And when I found that out, that was like in my freshman year of college. And I ran into some guys who had Bubblegum Crisis, you know.
Star Blazers.
And after that, it was just like, oh, here's Star Blazers, here's Bubblegum Crisis, here's all of the contemporary stuff. Dirty Pair was another early one of mine. And after that, it was just like, oh, my God, it's like drinking from the fire hose.
Once you start, you cannot stop. It is like crack. Now, what gave you guys the idea to get this fan parody off the ground? Obviously, the first one, This Is Otakudom. What gave you that first idea?
Well, I was a fan of fan parodies. I'd seen a lot of them, watched a lot at Otakon, and I'd always wanted to do it. After making music videos for a couple of years, it suddenly occurred to me I have the technology. I upped my computer to the point where I could make music videos with my computer. So I sought out people who had done them before and found, here's the tech that I need. And we just really wanted to do what we had seen before, what we really loved. The idea for This Is Otakudom came from our desire to make a fan parody. And I had been watching This Is Spinal Tap over and over and over again while making chainmail with a friend. Now, if anyone's ever made chainmail before, the idea is that you want something that's enough to distract you from the agony that is your life, but you don't want to have to pay so close attention to it that you're not looking down.
At the chainmail.
At the chainmail, because, yeah, you could hurt yourself. So we watched this about a dozen times. So when we started thinking about what fan parody do we want to do, I said, hey, how about a fake documentary about anime fans thinking about This Is Spinal Tap?
Well, obviously the name, this is Otakudom, spining. Well, spining. Wow, that's great. After saying the word Spinal Tap,
totally
spining.
Spinal
yes,
Tap.
You spine them like
we
nobody's business. Yes, you obviously this is Otakudom coming from this. This is Spinal Tap. So yeah, John, how many fan parodies had you watched before getting in touch with these guys about that?
Actually, I had never seen a fan parody before. My start was going to the first convention was 2000 Otakon. I actually met Scott at that point. And I saw my first ever anime music video. I'm like, wow, that's really neat. I want to do one. So I went and picked up my capture card and started making it and found out later on that it only exported in a really crappy resolution. So I took a break and Scott's like, we're making a fan parody. We need voice actors. Come on over. And I'm like, okay. And after that, I think I got locked in his house for about 5-6 months.
Yeah.
And that's what really captivated me. Then I did the Army of Darkness trailer.
I captivated you.
And then after the trailer, I mean, it was just like the feeling of making the first one is what really pushed you to want to do the next one.
Now, see, what I want to see is the documentary of you being locked in his house for 5 months. I think that would make a wonderful, like, extra
that
feature.
That footage will never be shown.
And oh, my God.
Never.
Now, see, this is the sort of fun you want to have in an interview. Matt, how about you? How'd you first get into the fan parody?
Well, how I first got involved in This Is Otakudom was I was a longtime staffer from Otakon. Like, four of my roommates were the first four founders of Otakon. And so I got sucked into helping with the convention pretty quickly. And one of the things that I gravitated towards was doing the music video contest. Like, I started in about 1997, and I kept it up until 2003. And along the way, I met Scott, who made...
Hello, Matt. Hello, Scott.
And
hello, Mrs. Preposition. Hello, Mrs. Supposition. I keep falling off.
Yes. And... And after a while, Scott had won the music video contest like a number of times. And when they keep coming up to collect prizes, you eventually get to recognize people. So so we got to be friends. And then when he said, well, I've done pretty well with the music videos, but I'd like to do something more. Let's do a fan parody about fandom. How about we make it about Otakon? And I'm like, well, I guess you could do that. And I thought I'd better attach myself to the project so he'd make something that we could still show at Otakon that wasn't like, you know, too,
they're all pedophiles.
That wasn't too derogatory.
Oh my god!
And somehow
robot pedophiles.
And
robot pedophiles dream of electric sheep.
Anyway, I was helping Scott out with the jokes and whatnot, and eventually I wound up somehow having a cameo along with Dwayne Johnson, who was also helping with the music video contest at the time. And after that, it was like, oh, well, that worked out pretty well. How about helping out with Steam? So I contributed more gags to Steam and actually did a major voice in that one.
And lots of writing.
So one thing led to another, and before you knew it, you were deeply involved.
Yeah.
And by the way, thank God this is a podcast, because this would totally never fly on radio. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, we could say fucking shit as much as we want, because, God damn it, I don't really care. So there you go.
You can't say fucking shit like that. There might be goddamn children listening.
Shit. Damn it. You're right. Now, obviously, Scott, since you started off with the music video, just how much more intensive is it to do a fan parody on the level of This Is Otakudom or Steam?
Yes.
Wow, it's like am I at the DC panels all over again. Is such and such going to be in this? Yes or no?
What is intensified hell?
Well, the main difference between doing a music video and doing a fan parody is that you have a lot more control. There's more time. When I'm making a music video, I'm still trying to tell a story. I'm still trying to use animation. There are still limitations. So in that way, it's not really all that different. But I had to learn how to record audio, how to mix audio, how to write the jokes and such. So how we did that is we watched a lot of fan parodies, and it's grueling, it's difficult, it's kind of insulting, but you have to do it. What worked? What didn't? What do we make sure we don't do? What types of things do work? And very, very early on, we came up with the ideas. There are a lot of in-jokes that go on for 5 minutes. And if you're not one of the three people that this was intended for, it just dies. In addition to that, a lot of times there's very, very little continuity. And what gets people to continue to watch, even if they're not aware of it, is an ongoing plot or at least a development. So we decided we were going to have a lot of in-jokes because you can't have a fan parody without in-jokes. But right next to them, we'd have an overt joke or something that anybody could get or something that was just kind of funny by itself, slapstick, whatever. And then we also needed to have some sort of engaging ongoing characters.
Now, John, you had mentioned that you had started to get into the anime music video scene when you were asked to voice act. Now, actually seeing the production of the fan parody being made, how much more intensive was it than those initial tryings that you were trying?
I quit. No, actually, I finally finished my one video, and then I think while we were doing Otakuden, we were making the
This Is Your Life.
Yeah, This Is Your Life. And then we did the Captain Tyler All-Star video afterwards. And, I mean, I tried a couple tries. But, I mean, when you work with Scott, you just
– he's helpless without me.
There's something about being the most anal person alive. And
oh, but in a good way.
I just couldn't get the rod out of my ass to sit there and build up another video yet.
So, Matt, how did the rod get up your ass?
I refuse to answer that question.
Well, okay, fine. Answer this one then. I mean, from the sounds of things,
edit that part out.
Yeah, right. From the sounds of things, you were mostly just involved on the staff side. Did you ever do any sort of videos yourself before being involved with the fan parodies?
Yeah, I did a couple of like really primitive music videos before I started doing the music video contest. I mean, I think everyone who's interested in music videos tries at some point. So I had like, you know, one video that I completed. I've got three or four more that never like came to full term, and I'm hoping to like get back into it now that I've made the leap to digital. I should mention that when I was making my original like tries at music videos, this was all VCR to VCR stuff, like two VCRs with the fantastic prosumer.
Damn it!
The fantastic prosumer feature of insert video.
Matt, are you done yet? Come on back to bed.
And so after that proved to be a little bit technically difficult, I
burned my finger.
Yeah. I wound up helping do technical and gag writing stuff for Mystery Anime Theater 3000, which is basically what it sounds like. We get some puppets, sit in front of a video screen, and make fun of movies at Otakon.
With 6,000 people watching.
4,500.
It was amazing.
And so I would show up for gag writing sessions for that, and I would try and contribute the most weird, surrealistic jokes I could to the mix. And occasionally they'd make it through and get used in the show, so that was kind of satisfying.
Now, obviously, Scott, since you've been watching the fan parodies for ages, and you did show a couple of the old ones that were done with just two VCRs and a mic, how much does technology add to the process here? I mean, the fact that you can actually, you know, go in there and lip sync the voices perfectly to the mouths certainly adds something to it. Just how much has the fan parody genre evolved over the years?
Well, you gain and you lose. One of the big things way back in the day was how raw they were, was how difficult it was to do. So when people would flub their lines, you couldn't go back and do it. You would do an entire scene with one microphone, bunch of people sitting around, like old 1930s radio dramas. So there was an awful lot of sympathy when you were watching those. But nowadays, you've got computers, you've got, you know, frame-by-frame editing. So the audience tends to be a lot less forgiving. So you can't really get away with that level of quality like you could back then. So in a way, we've lost some of it because they're less amateurish, which was really a part of the attraction. If you do a really, really slickly dubbed parody, you're going to look just like a professional dub. I mean, not really.
Well, aside from the fact that you're making horrible sheep jokes.
Or possibly really good sheep jokes, hopefully. But that is something that's been lost. What, however, has been gained is you can concentrate more on stories. You can concentrate more on what you're trying to tell, what you're trying to do, and you can get your inflections much better. Usually I record actors completely separately. I'll get someone to come in. They can do a line over and over and over again until they get it right. It's my job as the director to keep continuity, to listen and say, does this sound like this was recorded weeks apart? And does it sound like these two people are not in the room together? It's my job to get that person to sound like it's very natural. But we do have the opportunity for them to do take after take after take. And a lot of times we'll play it back and we'll think, oh, I like the direction you're going with this. Now try that or now try that, which is totally impossible in the big group with everybody speaking at once. So you gain some and you lose some.
Now, John, just how hard is it getting a line to sound right without actually hearing what the line before it was?
It's extremely I just don't know what to say.
What the hell's your problem?
I mean,
again,
the first line that the first line I ever had to do was "aw shit," and it must have taken 60 damn takes to sit there and get "aw shit," and it was just like, "Is it good yet? Is it good?"
Now I want disappointment, John.
Aw shit.
Now that's not disappointing enough, John. You want coffee and you want caffeine in it. Come on, come on. What do you want?
I don't want to do this anymore. There's too many lines.
No, sound natural. Sound natural, John.
Oh, shit.
Oh, that's better.
So originally it was pretty much like that walk-on guy who basically just has to stand there and cough, and yet they do that 60 times from 60 different angles and 60 different types of coughs, one hacking, one slight, and one mucusy.
Exactly like that. And I will tell you, the funniest line that we ever did was making me say Pika. For 30 minutes, me and Scott have had the biggest Pokemon chat ever made.
Pika.
It was just Pika nonstop back and forth. You're like, Pika, 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 the entire time.
Well, one of the techniques I'll use in trying to get someone to sound a certain way, I'll say, okay, here's the line before, now you respond. That didn't work. Or just straight up, here's how you should try to do it. Try to sound angry. Try to sound, you know, whatever. And that didn't work. So sometimes what you have to do is I will deliver the line the way that I think it should be said, and you copy me. So his line was, Pika? So that's what we did. Pika?
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 Pika.
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 Pika?
In the same room was Doug. Doug was also in the same scene, and he was on the ground hyperventilating, his face an intriguing shade of mauve, as he just really – and he had to be quiet because we were recording. So he's hyperventilating, covering his mouth, trying not to make any audible sounds, and we're just looking at him, Pika, Pika, Pika. And somewhere in the middle I went, that's it! That's the one!
And the worst part is that it was completely low voice. Like, the guy was low the entire time. It was like, Makona? And I was like, Pika?
Oh, my God.
You got to love it. You totally got to love it. Wow. All right. So, Matt, speaking of the cracking up, how do you stop yourself from cracking up in the middle of a line when doing something like this?
You just have to let it go a couple of times and get it out of your system.
Yeah.
That's the great thing. There's lots of hard drive space. If you blow the line, it's more important to just blow it a couple of times and keep the actors in a good mood so they can still perform it at the right level. It's not going to go perfect on the first take. It never does. If it does, you're incredibly lucky.
Now, to switch to the technical side a little bit, did your technology change anywhere from This Is Otaku Dome to Steam, or were you basically using the same equipment?
I got a new desk.
New chair.
And a new chair. A new chair. Yeah. Oh. My butt felt so much better while making steam. You can totally hear that. I mean, it was a hardwood chair.
We didn't
and every
have to
time,
get the paddle out anymore and whack it.
Yeah. Oh, it was so good. Other than that, now we did do a couple of things different. One thing that I learned, well, when we were doing This Is Otaku Dome, we actually recorded everything to videotape. I didn't have an MD. I didn't have a mini DV recorder. I didn't really have anything. So I was recording onto a hi-fi videotape, which, as a lot of people don't know, that's a much higher quality than your standard cassette tape. So it's a good middle jump. Mm-hmm. When I could do that, I could show people on the screen what their character would be, you know, the visual, and they would go along with it. And we would just do this over and over and over again. With the touch of a button, I could fly back to the beginning of the scene and play it again, et cetera. So that was very, very useful from the point of view of the actor. However, there was a slight tape hiss, and I got really frustrated, but we didn't want to switch what we were doing halfway through, because then half the lines would sound one way and half would sound another way, and it just wouldn't be consistent. So when we went over to Steam, I got a little better equipment. I started switching over to recording directly into the computer. So you didn't have the visual side of it, but by then mostly everybody knew how to do it. And if we absolutely needed to, I would visually record the scene on the VCR, play it, and then record it onto the computer. So we didn't actually change a whole lot of the technology, but we started to learn how to use it much, much better, how to pull some noise out of some of the clips, you know, et cetera.
So practice makes perfect, as it were.
Definitely. And then there were some software. When we did This Is Otakudom, I barely knew how to use Photoshop. It took me probably about an hour and a half to figure out how to get the little black box.
Oh, God.
On there's a little scene where at the end of the bus segment, they're driving away, and it says there are 36 hours of the con left. And there's a little black box, because that's what they did in Star Blazers. They put a black box wherever there was kanji, so to pretend, well, this is an American cartoon. And I was trying to figure out how to do that. And now I just fly through, and I can do this stuff in about a half a second in Photoshop. So most of it was actually learning different software.
I know how you feel. I'm learning Photoshop currently, so trust me, I feel your pain.
It's a really powerful package, but you got to get into its mindset. You really got to figure out how to do layers and paths and you know, gamma layers and all that.
What's
sort of
layer?
Stuff.
Yeah,
I am so tired of hearing the word feather already, and I just started like maybe 3 weeks ago. So now, John, how claustrophobic does it get being in a room with probably very little light? I'm just imagining this in my head and recording those lines until you get them right.
Well, it wasn't really the claustrophobicness.
We act naked, so it's very freeing.
Yeah, it was more the fact.
Oh, man.
Once again, thank God this is a podcast.
We have a pause for laughter.
Hee-hee.
But it was actually the heat of the summer and the fact that there was no air conditioner at Scott's house. So basically you could shower yourself with sweat and be clean by the time you left.
And we had to keep the windows shut because my neighbors live about 20 feet away from me. So we're yelling at 1 o'clock in the morning trying to get these voices down. But I had to keep the window shut, and it was about 120 degrees.
Oh, God.
So I'm assuming you consumed a lot of water.
Oh, yeah. I would go through his water pitcher like no tomorrow. I'm like, hey, Scott, I'm filling out the water pitcher. It's like the fifth time tonight?
Whenever an actor was coming over, I made Gatorade ahead of time.
It works for the football players. It works for the fan parody guys. Mm-hmm. That much is a given. Now, switching over to the con side, because obviously now that it's done, you know, now that it's been shown a couple times.
First the AMs, then the cons.
Yes, definitely. The first time it was shown, I mean, I know that you've told me about it before. It was
Otakudom or Steam?
Otakudom. Yeah, the first time it was shown, it was a bit of a shock to you and or something along those lines. But talk about what it's like showing your work in front of literally thousands of people, because that's how many people actually go to these things at Otakon.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first time Otakudom was shown was an absolute disaster. It was in a room that seats about 2,000 people. And we were put at the end of the block because the theory was, well, we were the nutballs who were actually running around promoting, advertising, asking people to go, wearing these promotional T-shirts, handing out flyers, tacking up flyers, that sort of thing. So, of course, people are going to come and wait through all the other stuff. But there were a lot of technical problems. The audio was bad. Audio with amateur sound is really tough in those rooms. Professional sound is still hard in those rooms. You can dock aircraft carriers in these rooms and still have room for a couple of discos. And you just can't really get the balance right even with professional. Well, amateur sound is just horrible by comparison. So people are sitting through a couple of parodies which were done by people who knew even less than I did about levels and all of that. And people were just getting really fed up and they were walking out. So it started with about 500 people in the room, which is a pretty decent group. But in a 2,000 or 2,500 seat room, you know, that's only a fifth. So it still feels a little vacant. And people were just leaving by droves. So there were a lot of personal things that were happening. I was already kind of sad and upset that day. Disasters just followed me to Otakon. But by the time Otakudom actually started, there were only about 100 people in the room. Now, about 50 of the people there were people who worked on it. So there was virtually nobody in the room, although I've had more than 50 people come to me and say, hey, I was there. Maybe they were. So it was very, very disappointing. The audio was messed up. I recorded the tape on the tape that was played the night before, and I watched it back to make sure it was perfectly fine. Then when we got it to the con, I found out that the VCR that I used, the heads were out of alignment. So it was dropping in and out. There was
a lot of pop and hiss on the hi-fi track because the heads were just slightly out of alignment, and our VCR played it with all the pop and the hiss, and we're like, well, there's nothing we can do. It's on the tape that way.
It was just terrible. Now, one thing you really got to bear in mind, I had no idea this was going to be a big thing. I made it with the idea that this was just going to be shown in a tiny little rooms because that's where I'd seen fan parody shown. We made it as a thank you letter to Otakon for running such a great con for years and also as a love letter to fan parody creators, but I didn't expect it to be shown anywhere past Otakon. And of course, it was only going to be shown the one time. I mean, maybe a couple years later they'd show it again, but that would be it. So I'm thinking it's only going to get its one shot. And I'm sitting there, sitting next to a girl who had just dumped me, and watching this and seeing it drop out, the audio's bad, people are leaving. The only people that are watching it in this cavernous, echoey room, it was just horrible. And the only thing that was stopping me from crying is that I ran out of tears about a half hour earlier. So that was just horrible. However, the next year, it had actually become popular, and we'd gone to other conventions, and conventions that weren't Otakon actually wanted to show it, which completely astounded me. And when we came back to Otakon the next year, Matt got us in a really nice room, about 500 people, seat room, carpeting, so the sound was better, and that was probably the most intense, coolest screening I've ever seen. People were actually saying things back to the screen. They were applauding. They were laughing. I mean, thunderous applause in some places. Jokes that we wrote at 3 o'clock in the morning in my spare bedroom that I'm like, oh, this is lame. People are just laughing hysterically. So it went from absolutely horrible to I just wasted 7 months of my life to and that's why I do it.
Well, I can certainly see that. I mean, when we did show it to, I mean, there were maybe 25 people in the room at my club. There were 25 people on the floor laughing hysterically. So you guys have at least maybe 25 to 30 people at Brooklyn College that are very, very happy to hear that that steam is made, and they'll be very, very happy when I bring it in on Tuesday and tell them that we're watching it on Thursday. So there you go.
The really cool thing was, even though Scott was disappointed with the presentation that first year,
dead dog party.
One of the things that you do after the convention is you have a thing called a dead dog party, where the staff just sort of like crawls into like some place and says, "We lived through the con, hooray! Do we have anything fun we can do that doesn't actually involve like moving?"
And breathing takes too much work.
Yeah, so we like sit down and like get our feet on, and if anyone has booze, we pass it around and stuff. Was like, well, what do we got left over from the con we can watch? Like, oh, we got this fan parody this year. Throw in the fan parody. We haven't seen it. Okay, we were all busy during the con. We missed it. So I threw it in, and people just kept drifting over to watch it, and more people kept drifting over to watch it because people were watching it, and they were like, this is so funny. Oh, my God, this is so great. Where can I get a copy? And and by the time it was over, it was like, I don't even see what Scott's so upset about. People really like this thing. And and since it got such a great response from the staff, and I was like, you know, running off tapes for so many of them, I was like, well, we got to show it again. We'll just put it in a smaller room where the sound is better, and maybe people will like it more. Yeah.
Coincidentally, every single person who runs a video room at conventions happened to be at that exact party. So when I started writing to conventions, and I was thinking like, ah, crap, that really sucked. That was done so badly. But, you know, everybody worked so hard on it. I'm still going to try to promote it. And I started writing to conventions. People were writing back to me saying, oh, my God, I saw this at Otakon's Dead Dog Party. And I was hoping that I could somehow get a hold of you. We really, really want to show it. And from there, I mean, it was surreal. I mean, I'm writing to, like, Ohio, and they're writing back saying, well, yes, the one time that I left the state in the past 10 years, I was at that exact party. And so it got shown all over the country very quickly. We had people writing to us from outside of the country. I don't know how they heard of it. People are writing to me saying, yeah, I saw this at such and such, you know, Joe's Garage Convention, which I've never heard of. And like, wow, I didn't give anybody out there a copy. How did that get shown? They're writing to me for copies. So it exploded. Croatia, Australia, England. Yeah, we're all over a bunch of places in Canada. I was getting requests from everywhere. You know, yay, internet.
Yeah, exactly. I was just about to say, because of the internet, there are going to be people out there who probably didn't even see it and are just going to hear the hype and be like, wow, I totally need to actually view this thing. And that's how you get other countries. That's how you get all that. I mean, I myself, I have no idea how our club even got a hold of it, because I think that the copy was actually a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy. And
oh, that one. Yeah. I remember running off the original.
Yeah, right.
And I mean, just like by that point, I think another member of our club had, you know, just made a copy for the club to put, you know, put it into our library so other people could watch it.
Copy.
Yeah.
And well, still, I mean, just the fact that, you know, even though it was just there, it didn't matter, you know, whether it was a copy of a copy of a copy. If something's good, people are going to laugh at it. And it had the room. So definitely for that. And now, John, I got to ask you, what's it like suddenly, you know, just going from being like some dude at a convention to being the guy who's like, oh, my God, you were in This Is Otaku Them. Oh, my God, you were in Steam.
It gets him women. The bastard.
Well, actually, it's really something I just never expected. You know, I was just collecting anime, you know, buying my VHS tapes. And then
don't date yourself too much, John.
And then, like, it's just suddenly, you know, you're voice acting and you're seeing yourself up on screen. And I remember when we first showed Otaku Them at ShoujoCon as a preview, which was, you know, probably one of the most incredible things, because it was a really small room, probably fit maybe 60 people tops. And, you know, it started out like 30 people after we sat there and ran around saying, come see this fan parody, you know.
We managed a tape of Scott and John running around ShoujoCon going, come on, come see our fan parody, come see our fan parody.
Come see our fan parody. Oh, come on, please.
And, yeah, so we ended up almost filling the room, and everybody really liked it. And I think that's what really pushed us those last couple of weeks to get it ready for the convention. Mm-hmm. And that was, like, our driving factor. And when you go from, like, you know, just anime collector to anime voice actor or anime writer of a fan parody, you know, it's a great feeling. But I think the best thing is just, like, the joy you bring to the fans. It's another thing at an anime convention that they get to do. I mean, unfortunately, the MAT3K is no longer around, but it was just like the most amazing thing. And, you know, if we can just meet like half their standards and give that joy back to the anime fan, you know, it's something that really makes you feel proud of.
Similar question to you, Matt. Basically, what's it feel going to be, you know, a member of the staff to being a member of the staff who was part of that thing?
I try not to let it bug me too much. You may not believe it considering how much I run around, but I'm a very shy person. It takes a lot for me to work myself up to stand up in front of people or do interviews like this or do panels, which is weird because I seem to be doing a lot of panels recently.
I drag him kicking and screaming.
I'm much happier to sit in the back and just do work and do stuff, but I also have this like, you know, desire to creatively express myself, which I haven't been able to fully eradicate. So, when my So
Matt does writing for us too.
Yeah. So when my friends are like, "Hey, Matt, we're doing a Mystery Science Theater thing for the convention. Will you help out? Because we know you make these weird comments all the time." And it's like, "Oh, okay, I'll help out with that." And it's like, "Well, we're a little short of people to appear on stage. Can you do a Groucho Marx mustache?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah, I can do a Groucho Marx mustache." "Okay, great. You can be the mad scientist." "What?" And it's like, "Yes, you'll introduce the show." "What?" "Don't worry. It's only a couple of things. Do you just go out there in front of 5,000 people and say some funny things and introduce the show?" And I'm like, "Oh my God, I'm going to die. I'm going to have a heart attack right there and just keel over dead." So from that viewpoint, yeah, it gets seen by the same number of people, but I don't have to see 5,000 people staring at me. And believe me, until you've put on a silly fake Groucho Marx mustache with like theater paint and put on and stood in front of a stage and talked about giant plexiglass aluminum foil 2001 monoliths with a straight face.
Anime contact lenses.
Yeah. You lose your fear of a lot of things pretty quick doing that.
Now, this was your first comic convention, correct? I mean, showing this is Otakudom and or Steam or anything along those lines, correct?
Well, the first one that I'd been to, yes. Yeah. I have no idea where our stuff's been shown, honestly. So it's the first that I know of.
Okay. Also, you mentioned that at the previous Otakon, I believe it was, you got to show a preview copy of Steam to the guys, or yeah.
In 2004, we had a really rough work-in-progress screening that was honestly about maybe a 30% build, and it was still an hour long. And then last year, Otakon 2005, we had probably about a 90% finished build.
Oh, 98.
Whatever. And anyway, so it was not actually 100% completely finished. I'm pulling the plug in this goddamn thing because this took 3.5 years. Until November 15th. This is, I believe, the first screening that I've been at for the 100% completely finished version. And NakoCon, which was right around then, was very, very, very close, although nobody could hear it because it's just the room that we were in. So I would have to say that, technically speaking, this is the first showing of the completely finished version that I've been at, you know, comic, anime, or otherwise. I haven't even sat through and watched it at home. So what, do you think I'm going to watch my own movie? And I'm sick of it. Oh, but this is the first time that I've seen completely start to finish, completely finished, all the spelling errors fixed, et cetera.
Now, I know that you're your own worst critic. So what was it like?
That guy sucks!
What was it like actually watching it all the way through?
I'm not watching the film when I'm seeing it. I'm listening to the audience. I know the film. I know what it looks like, even though it's 50 times bigger than – oh my God, that's so scary. But it's the audience. I know what the actor said. I know how the actor said it. I know what that graphic is. I know all those things. I don't know if it's funny. I don't know if someone's going to laugh. At Anime Next, at the tail end of last year, we showed maybe like an 80% build. And there was this girl who was sitting in front of me that every time one of the alias-based jokes popped up, she was hyperventilating. Nobody else in the room was laughing. I guess they didn't recognize.
Alias, yeah.
I guess. Yeah. And at that moment, I thought to myself, the 15 or 20 hours that it took me to figure out how to do that effect and get that done was worth it. So kind of what happens when I'm watching something like this is I'm either inside crying, "Oh, I should have changed that. Nobody laughed at that. That's horrible. I should have cut that.
I've inflicted pain on these people. I meant to entertain them and I'm hurting them. Oh, God."
Or I get validation. Now, last night's screening, there were about 20, maybe 30 people there. I've had – there were about 2,500 people at Otakon screening. Mm-hmm. But last night, I could hear individual people. I could – turn around and see that the girl that I thought was really cute just laughed at something I wrote. You know, I mean, that's a good feeling. You know, that's great. So I think that's more what it's like. That's when I learn what worked, what didn't, where did I go wrong, what worked, and then every once in a while, I'm really, really glad that I put the extra mile on one tiny little detail because I heard like one chuckle at exactly that moment.
Yeah, with every audience, you know, we got some different response, which was really cool because, you know, somebody at this convention maybe didn't laugh at much about that and then just broke out laughing about something else. And then we come here and it's the complete opposite. And we were really like excited about that because every time, you know, you get a little different laugh, you're like, oh, phew, thank God that joke's so funny to somebody.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing about doing conventions is you can go to 10 different conventions, 10 different places, and you'll get 10 different reactions to like fan parody music video contest because I noticed this running the music video contest for Otakon for a couple of years was we'd sit down and I'd say, oh, this is the video that everyone's going to love. And then I'd like show it the first time and everyone would really be interested in the video before and after it. But they wouldn't be like, oh, yeah, that one's good. Golf claps, yes. And I'd be like, wow, geez, that video was really flat. God, I guess I'm the only one who likes it. And then, you know, we'd come back and we'd show it in a different room with a different crowd later in the day. And on, like, everyone would be cheering for that video. And it's like, yeah, that's great. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes the crowd's hot. Sometimes the crowd's cold. Sometimes you just get people with different tastes. So it's nice to, like, take the parody around and show it because it's like, ah, the people who get the Lost joke, the people who get the Alias joke, the people who understand the James Bond jokes. Okay, that's great. And then you realize it's all worthwhile.
But when consistently there are things that no one laughs at, it hurts.
Yes.
I can imagine because I'm afraid of anybody. Like, I would never want to be in the same room while somebody's listening to my podcast because there were a couple of instances where, you know, some friends were just listening to one segment that I did and then, you know, they'd laugh at that particular segment, but then the other segment would come on.
And just lie there dead.
Exactly. And that's the thing about putting something together. You never know what's going to hit and what's going to be an absolute bomb. And when you do see the absolute bomb happen, it's hard to stop yourself from running out of the room in a fit of rage.
It's not so much that it's the absolute bomb. It's just that it sort of fails to elicit any response. It just sort of like sits there inert as opposed to people going, ah, this sucks. Kill him. Kill him. Get the Frankenstein rakes and the torches and go find this guy and kill him.
Get the rope. Jodan. Let's come on.
For those of you who haven't been to an anime convention, that's how it is. I wish I was joking, but it's totally not. There was one guy who, for an Adult Swim panel that I did and the American Animation panel, did a review. And even though I was not the only person at the panel, the only comment he had was, I hated that guy who was running the panel. And then when he went to the Adult Swim panel, his exact words were, I was hoping that guy wouldn't be there, but he was there, and I left. And I'm like, did you even realize that I wasn't even the one running the panel? So it's really funny how stuff like that can happen sometimes.
Seems so authoritative.
Oh, man. Now, obviously, the major switch from Steam, from This Is Otakudom to Steam, is that probably the anime conventions were probably coming to you as opposed to you coming to the anime conventions this time around. Was that actually the case, or did you still have to approach them?
Do you mean in trying to get it shown after it was finished?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, actually, I've been trying to promote it since November. It is now the end of February. And I have had some success where I would write to conventions and they would write back and say, oh, yeah, I've heard of your work and we'd love to show that. Or I would get, yeah, I've heard of that. I haven't seen it. Sure, send us a copy. We'll take a look at it. But I would say about 25% are the people who are really excited and they've seen it and they're fans, which blows me away. Mm-hmm. And I have absolutely no self-esteem whatsoever. So when anybody has said, hey, I saw your stuff and I'm ducking and they're like, oh, and I liked it. I'm like, oh, really? And I'm like, you know, maybe just want me to drop my guard here. And then you go, and now you're going to hit me. And they go, no, I really did. And they'll like throw quotes back at me just to prove that. I'm like, wow.
And there's something so surreal about that. Like you do a line in a fan parody and you find someone who actually liked the line enough to like memorize it and quote it at you. And it's like, this is what the people in Monty Python must feel like, but about like, you know, 1 millionth that good.
Yeah. Well, the fact is, you know, when I was at that screening yesterday, there were people that were like, as soon as the world will be saved by Steam line came up, there were about maybe 15 people in the audience saying it the exact same time. So
that was me. That was me. And I was saying it very, very loudly. Well, that's a big thing. That line is taken from fan parodies since around 1992. So I'm not a big filmmaker. I'm not all awesome by myself or anything like that. No, forget it. I got where I am, which isn't very far, and I certainly don't make any money, by the people who came before me. And so we like to have little nods to our friends, you know, like when you're on TV and you go, "Hi, Mom." Well, the entirety of that movie is kind of a big "Hi, Mom" to just about everybody that I've ever run into or liked. So that line is really cool because it's the thread that I had seen as a kid, you know, back when I was 30. And and I'm still a kid. But I had seen that in other parodies, and I decided, oh, if I ever make one, I got to have that in there because, you know, that's cool. And most people who see it don't get it. But maybe the guy who made Ranma One-Third has seen This Is Otakudom and looked at it and went, oh, my God, that guy saw that and he remembered that. Oh, that's so cool.
That is totally ripping off my work.
Well, we hope for the former, but yeah, the latter could be. And that's what I hope. The funny thing is I have never seen a mention of This Is Otakudom in another fan parody. I'm kind of hoping that happens, but I haven't seen it happen yet.
Like there are tons and tons of fan parodies cranked out every year. I mean, it's a lot easier to make something like a music video or a trailer. There are lots of those made every year, but fan parodies, they're long. They're supposed to have a point, and they're supposed to be funny. So the bar is a lot higher to producing those. So not a whole lot of fan parodies actually get made every year.
More than in the last couple of years, however, that much I've certainly seen.
That's because of the boon of the computer generation. It's become a lot easier for people to digitize and manipulate video on their personal computers.
And people like us. One of the things that got me to make music videos is I knew that there was a place to show them. Matt had promised me it would get shown at Otakon. So I knew that it was worth for me to put all this work into it because it would be shown. So Matt and I are now in charge of Otakon's fan-produced film track. I go around and I do panels because I want to encourage people to do this. Do I think that I single-handedly am having this big impact? No, but there are a lot of people doing this. As long as if you build it, they will come. So if we have the screenings, people make stuff, and I'll send it in, and it'll get shown.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I was such a big stumper for music videos at Otakon, because I enjoyed music videos. So I was like, hey guys, if you're doing a convention, you might as well like have a music video showing. And they're like, why? And I'm like, well, I think they're way cool and everything, and I'm sure there must be some other people who'd like them. So we had a music video contest, and people were like, oh, we actually filled the room with it. Well, I guess we'll have a second one.
That's where I saw my first.
That's completely how I got into music videos, which is then later how I got into doing fan parodies.
Yeah. And the thing is, once you start having an annual music video contest, people are like, oh, well, if I actually do go to the trouble of finishing a music video, I can send it into a con and they'll show it someplace. So it won't be just me and my friends seeing it. And then once you get a lot of people doing it, then you're like, oh, well, now I got to have a really good music video, like really boss music video, so everyone will vote for me and I'll win a little useless award or something.
We haven't gotten to that level yet. Yeah. We just have no encouragement to make an actually good fan parody because there's no competition. But I'd like it to stay that way.
Yeah. And what we are planning on doing at future cons is kind of like an Iron Chef fan parody project, which hopefully we should be doing at Otakon this year, where we're going to actually take a couple hours and have people come in, script it, voice it, get it ready to go, sound effects, everything we need.
Finish 10-minute scene, start to finish.
Finish 10, maybe 15-minute scene, and it will be shown that night, or you know, we'll do it on Friday and be shown Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And you know, this way maybe people get more encouraged to come out and start making more fan parodies, so you know, a lot more could be shown because the fans love them. I mean, I love sitting there and watching them. Anytime.
Well, I'm certainly one of those fans that loves sitting there and watching them, so I'll certainly agree with that. Now, to sort of wind things down a little bit here, what advice would you give to other people out there who might be thinking, hey, I totally want to do this?
Don't be intimidated. You can do anything from a 30-second commercial spoof up to hour-long thing. The first thing that you should do, don't think about the tech. Don't think about, well, how exactly would I do this? Watch them. Watch real movies. See what works, see what doesn't. I think the biggest mistake that happens, the biggest thing when somebody is making any sort of film, and this is a film, any sort of film, is they don't keep their audience in mind. You just start throwing out kind of what you think you want to express. And when you look at it, it just doesn't flow. It doesn't come together. The pacing is awful. So just sit back, watch films, see what does and doesn't work. Get people to help you. Get people to criticize. Hand your script over to someone else. It is so incredibly painful. Have work in progress screenings if you can. But the important thing is not for you to go and prove to yourself, yes, I was right all along. Or if the audience hates it, it's, well, these are the only 392 people who are going to hate this. I'm sure they're just wrong. If you are looking for criticism, be sure that you can take it.
How about you, John? Any advice?
I'd say don't overwhelm yourself. Don't give yourself such a big project that you're going to sit there and do 10 minutes where, you know, you got a solid quality 10 minutes and, you know, you're expecting to do 30 and you have nothing left and it just sits there and then suddenly it's gone. I mean, try and keep your enthusiasm going and make sure that, you know, you have a solid plot. And don't really set a time limit that, you know, I want it done by this con no matter what. Because, I mean, if we did if we did Steam like that,
oh, yeah,
we would have destroyed ourselves by, you know, because we were like 2 years after Otakonom. Yeah, we're going to have this done for Otakon. Yeah.
And Otakon 2003 was the original deadline. And then Otakon 2004. And it wasn't even done for 2005. It was done for NakoCon 2005.
So basically, I mean, we still wanted to take our time and make sure that it was going to be, you know, a solid movie, that it had the plot, it had what we wanted in the characters or whatever it needed, you know, to really make something solid.
Not that actually happened.
Not that it was like, you know, wow, this character development was amazing. You know, you barely see half of them. But
it sucked less than it would have if we stopped at 2003.
It definitely sucked less. I mean, we don't want those, you know. Here's the first 20 minutes. Oh, there's dramatic black for 5, and then there's the rest of the movie.
God.
And I went, wow.
Well, we didn't have an ending for a year and a half, you know. That was.
And in the end, they all die, as many fan fictions go. And Matt, advice from you?
Have an ending before you start. there's not a whole lot I can add to what these guys have already said. Don't shoot for the moon on your first attempt. Do something short and funny, and once you're getting people to laugh, then you can go for the long form. Make stuff that you think is funny. Don't pander to the audience. One of the greatest things I ever heard was the guys from Mystery Science Theater, when they were riffing on their movies, they would throw in these obscure things which were tremendously funny, but only like 4% of their audience would get, and they were like, well, we're not here to please the lowest common denominator. The 4% of our audience who get this joke will find it incredibly funny, and that's enough for us. You know, they will enjoy it, and for the rest of the people, there's a joke coming along that they will like too. So you can't please everybody all the time, but don't ignore your audience either.
Amen to that.
As far as tech goes, though, ask people for help. I didn't know how to record stuff. So instead of me sitting there and thinking that, you know, in order to prove how awesome a person I was going to invent things from the ground up, forget it. I want to be the artist. I want to direct.
Be a tech wimp. Ask for help right away.
Yeah. I got nothing to prove. And if I try to keep everything to myself and prove I can do it by myself, you know what I prove? I suck. That's what I prove. I mean, seriously. So and your friends are your greatest resource. I have a friend who's an artist. I'm not going to draw our stuff by myself. I'm terrible. I mean, if you want stick figures, I'm your man. But anything more than that, forget it. So I do that. Well, John is actually into sound and sound design. So I ask him for help. Bobby Beaver down in Texas at CDS Productions, the fan parody creator. He was a huge influence on me. His was the first music video I'd ever seen. Just big mentor. I write to him, and aside from calling me a peon and making fun of me and all those sorts of things, after that, he started giving me some very sound advice. This is the exact model number of the microphone you should get. This is the exact thing you should do. Try this. Do this. Here are the settings. I listened to about half of them. And it managed to get done. Ask people for help. You know, Be humble. Realize you don't know shit. The director who's trying to prove – I wrote the entire script start to finish myself. I hid what was going to happen to all of my actors. Why? Just to prove how much of a god I am. I can't sit through that one. And I am thinking of one in particular. Nice guy. But you know, if you're shutting out your actors, you're shutting out your audience. You know, be humble. And don't put your goddamn name in the credits 482 times. Yes, the person who's the director, the person who did all that frickin' work, you could. That credits would be my name over and over and over and over and over and over and over. Oh, there's Matt. Over and over. There's John. Well, John was going to do it, but he couldn't show, so I did it. And I'm going to put that in. Do you know how boring that is? You know, reading credits is boring. Reading your own frickin' name over and over and over and over and over again, who is it important to? Just you. The audience, forget it. Write down director, the five people in the world who are going to care, and I'm one of them, is going to know that director means project whore. All right? We know you've done everything. You filled in every voice when somebody didn't show up. You know, you did all of the tech. You balanced all of the audio. We know that. We know that.
You know what? Honestly, if I needed a clip from this interview, that would be it right there. The director is the product whore. Amen to that. And also, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, even when Mel Brooks did everything, he put fake names in there, you know, just to, you know.
Did he really?
Yeah. And a lot of his movies, he did a lot more than he's actually listed for. But he would put, you know, Ivan von Schninkel in there.
Yes.
Or Biddle von Tiddlewinks. And, you know, just so it at least made it seem like there were other people involved.
That's actually pretty classy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any final thoughts from anybody? I shut everybody up. That works.
Do you mean something profound or something disgusting?
Anything.
Oh, I'm going to have to think of that.
Okay.
Make fan parodies. We like watching.
You know what? Amen to that. Guys, it has been an honor and a privilege. You guys are very, very fun and very, very friendly, and it was a really great interview.
Well, thanks for having me, and thanks for letting us put a little bit of a voice behind the stuff that we do. The reason I do this, it's to make friends. It's to meet people. I live my life with kind of the scout code, try to make things better than where it was before. And everybody says that. Very, very few people mean it. If you look at the end of all of my films, they all have a message, and they always say something, you know, for love and friendship, etc. If I can meet people, if I can get myself out of the house, anything that I can do to stop me from being the quiet, shy kid who hid alone in a room and was afraid to do anything other than read. Now, if I can go out, I can meet people, I can make people laugh, it means an incredible amount to me. And if I'm helping to make the world better, I don't care how tacky and how corny this sounds, because I mean it. If I can do that, I feel good about myself. And if I can help someone else do that, hey, feel free to email me. I'll share any of my tech or any of my background with you.
As far as last comments, ADV, why haven't you called me yet? I am just like a voice-acting guy. No, but
what I meant to that.
I'd have to say, like, from when doing it, it's the most fun experience you'll ever have. It not only instills, you know, yeah, this joy, it's you, but when you're extending that joy to others, it makes you feel great. And I mean, I'll give you one great example. We had a guy who worked on us really hardcore on This Is Otakunum, Doug. He worked so much, like he gave all his, like a lot of effort. And I mean, he really loved it. And recently, you know, over the years, he had gotten caught up in his band and his job and his personal life, and he wasn't able to come around. And we recently got him to come back to do his biography for the DVD as well as the commentary. And you know, he realized how much he just missed the fun of doing it. It's just like this little side thing, being with my friends and having fun and making other people enjoy and have fun is what really made him, like, you know, it brought a sparkle to his eye. And that's why I love doing it.
Well, making friends is what it's all about.
We should give you the website.
That's exactly what I was just about to ask. So the website's for those people who are interested.
The website for This Is Otakudom, which I don't know how long it's going to be up because the guy who's running it is graduating from school. Welcome.to/otakudom. And for Steam the Movie, which is not quite up yet, but should be up really soon. And this one I'm actually having a hand in, so hopefully that will get up and be updated. That's going to be steamthemovie.com.
Awesome. Matt, any last words or anything?
No, but I think the guys really hit it on the head when they said that the doing fan parodies is not to make yourself look cool. It's an excuse to hang out with your friends and make stupid jokes and share them with other people.
We'd make real movies if we were trying to get cool. We don't women by doing this.
Yeah, that was my greatest disappointment in life was that becoming a convention staffer just didn't get me the dump truck loads full of women that I expected it would.
Damn, you know?
Well, sometimes you just got to bite the bullet, I guess.
I've been doing that alone for so long.
Oh, that's what you call it now.
Hi-o! Guys, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for this, definitely. And thank you, the listeners, so much for listening to this. This was a special edition of Geek Speak. I'm putting this out as a separate episode. I knew it was going to be much longer than 10 minutes, and I'm glad it was because it was a really fun interview. The email address is speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. That's speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. I'll see you guys on Thursday for the full episode. Have a great week. Enjoy your geek. Take care, everybody.
It's time to speak geek with the geeks. Gaming, tech, news, and more here on Geek Speak. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. Let's geek out, everybody.